It's Essential Pittsburgh, a Veterans Day edition. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's been 12 years since U.S. forces were first engaged in Afghanistan, making this the longest war in U.S. history. In that time span, over 2,100 U.S. military personnel have given their lives fighting in and around Afghanistan as part of Operation Enduring Freedom. Among the troops from this region who have served in Afghanistan are a father and son, Pittsburgh natives Tom and Brendan Stokes. Tom Stokes is a colonel in the Army Reserves. He was in Afghanistan from 2010 to 2011. His son Brendan is in the Air Force Reserves and served in Afghanistan from 2012 until this past January, and they join us in studio. First, Colonel Tom Stokes, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
It is afternoon now. And Brendan Stokes, good to have you with us on this Veterans Day.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Colonel Stokes, you served as a behavioral health social worker in Afghanistan. How would you describe the nature of your work there?
Well, I'll describe it as a journey. I got my notification at the end of 2009 to deploy to Afghanistan. And my mission was supposed to be to work in the brand-new detainee facility at Bagram Airfield. But as is not uncommon in theater, my mission changed. And I was attached to an Air Force Combat and Operational Stress Control Unit. And I ended up being assigned to a forward operating base in eastern Afghanistan, forward operating base Gardez, which is about really close to, in some places, 600 yards away from the Pakistan border in some areas in that province.
And so the nature of your work, and when, you know, people hear the term behavioral health social worker, they wouldn't necessarily picture somebody engaging in this type of work in a war zone. But that is, in fact, what you did. So I'm curious, as I'm sure others are, about exactly what your duties were.
Okay, my area of operation was a province called Paktia, and it's about 8,000 feet up into the mountains, and my job was to be out there with the infantry and the MPs and to keep them in the fight in terms of behavioral health. So a lot of what I did was I engaged in prevention and outreach. So I took the services and the interventions to the soldiers, to the airmen. I traveled to austere locations at forward operating bases and combat outposts.
So when you say keep them in the fight, what does that mean exactly?
Engage in proactive types of interventions where we try to intervene, what I call intervening upstream, and we don't wait for things to occur behavioral health-wise. So I engage people where they are, and I talk to them about reducing stress levels, intervening regarding relationship problems, or whatever the issue is. But we do it very proactively in theater when you are what we call forward support.
We've heard of triage in the battle zone, so where medical personnel who are treating soldiers will, you know, try to identify who make priorities decisions based on need, who is most in need. How do you do that when it's something that is going on between the ears, a mental or a psychological issue?
The vast majority of what we deal with behavioral health-wise and in a combat zone has to do with a lot of reassuring, a lot of putting things in context. We actually use the words, you're having a very normal set of reactions to a very abnormal set of circumstances. So we do a lot of normalizing, and we do a lot of relationship building, and we do a lot of proactive engaging in that regard. And for some of the more serious kinds of formal issues, you know, we do some behavioral health intervention related to whatever that disorder is, whatever's going on with that individual.
Okay. And I guess what I'm asking is, how do you know who needs the help? How do you know when somebody when you're able to identify someone as, okay, this is a guy who's in trouble?
Well, that's something that's particular to people who have professional licenses like me. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I use my training and my experience to make those assessments and those diagnoses.
So are you looking for the signs, or does somebody bring it to your attention? Say, hey, we've got a guy over here. We need somebody to help him focus.
Okay, let me speak to that for a minute. What I did was when I got out to Fob Gardez, Paktia is an area probably around the size of the state of Delaware, and at any given time, maybe 2,500 soldiers in a very highly active enemy activity area, we'll say, especially at that time. And so what I did is through my travels to my assigned forward operating bases and combat outposts, I engaged in the process of setting up my eyes and ears. So what I did was at each place that I traveled to, I engaged key personnel, including senior non-commissioned officers, medics, company commanders, and essentially set them up as the eyes and the ears. And so by the time I was nearing the end of my tour, I had mobilized the whole province so that if somebody's having a bad day or somebody's going on, we have a way of people looking out for each other. One of the common terms that we use is being battle buddies to each other. And the nature of these very austere locations is that if you're having a bad day, people are so up close and personal with each other, somebody's going to notice it. And so then if necessary, then they would get back to me and I would intervene as necessary.
What would you venture to say are some of the challenges peculiar to this particular war that may be unlike any others that our troops have faced?
The two things that I talk about when I engage in that kind of thought process is, number one, we have a very large military-civilian gap these days where many people know the figure. It's either less than 1% or less than 0.5% of the eligible population actually wears the uniform these days. And that's a big challenge because it can lead to loneliness, anonymity, and isolation. And some people would say that social disconnectedness is the cause of some of the challenges that we face these days. The second thing is the stress level, the operational stress that goes along with wearing the uniform these days. It's very challenging to keep it going, both for military members and families, and not get too stressed out, basically. So we need to find ways to make sure that we are addressing that with the current people who wear the uniform and their families. And by the way, I always mention families when we're talking about military members.
And you've been working on the documentary Journey to Normal about female combat veterans. We've spoken about this on our program. What can you tell us about your part in this?
Well, it was an interesting way that it came about. I was home on leave for my daughter's wedding in 2010, and I picked up a copy of a local newspaper, the Pine Creek Journal, and there was Julie Herr DeStefano's picture on the front page. And so I thought to myself, maybe I should help her out with this film. So I went to the local public PBS, WQED, and I asked them, could you give me information so I can contact her? And they did. And she drove from Manhattan, New York the next day, and we met. And I said to her, if you want to make a movie about or a film about female combat veterans, you need to come to Afghanistan. And amazingly, she said yes. And it took about 5 months, and she came over and she was in bed with me for about 3.5 months. And she traveled with me and got to film, I think, about 100 women in the combat zone.
And in terms of their service, what should the people listening to this know about what the female combat veterans are engaged in?
female combat veterans these days are exposed to very much the same dangers as men are. And the one thing that struck me is how supportive the men are of the women in theater. Amazingly supportive of the women. They're treated in many respects just like the guys.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guests are Army Reserve Colonel Tom Stokes and Air Force Reservist Brendan Stokes, a father and son who both served in Afghanistan within 1 year of each other. So, Colonel Stokes, not long after you came back from Afghanistan, your son was deployed there. Based on what you knew from your own experiences, what kind of concerns did you have for Brendan?
Well, the way that it occurred, the first concern that I had was as a father, I'm talking about being a father, Brendan consulted with me, and he wanted to know, should he go? And so we went out to the place where everybody knows your name for us in the military, the VFW, and we had a discussion, and we decided that it would be a good thing for him to go. But the problem was where he was supposed to go was not where he ended up. He was supposed to go to Bagram Airfield, according to the information he had, and then the next day it became Kandahar. And that was my first, as a father, I had not been to Kandahar, and I know that that's a pretty active part of the country. So as a father, that was my first concern for him. And the second, obviously, was just in general, as any parent would think, you know, it's one thing for me to be over there, but it's a whole other thing as a parent to worry about your child.
And Brendan, let's bring you into the conversation. Did you pick your dad's brain at all before you went over to Afghanistan?
Well, it all started at the VFW, just like you said. I knew he had been there. I had been on the flip side of the equation, being the family member being the family member of someone who was deployed. So I consulted with him on this volunteer basis deployment. And I sure did. I asked him, you know, what can I do to support my fellow airmen whenever I'm deployed, and not just airmen, soldiers, sailors, Marines, whoever I might come in contact with. You know, what can I expect while I'm over there?
And what did he say?
Well, he's...
Sounds like you're trying to formulate an answer.
Just trying to formulate an answer.
Yeah, sure. No, that's fine. Take your time. I'm guessing that the nature of your deployment was certainly a little different from your dad's.
It was quite a bit different. You know, I don't – he was deployed as a mental health professional. Myself, I'm in the profession of medical supply with the Air Force. And I was – rather than – he spent a lot of time traveling between bases, building a community, building a network, whereas mine was – basically the entirety of my time was spent at Kandahar Airfield, like you mentioned. And while it's a different sort of animal, because Kandahar Airfield, and as many air bases are, tend to be very, very large places, and we spend a lot of time together with a lot of different units. So it's, I mean, in terms of the danger, it's really nothing different, but the mission is entirely different.
Did either of you, or perhaps both of you, consider that by the time you were first sent to Afghanistan, we were 10 years into that war, just about the length or greater than the length of any other war in U.S. history. And this was before either of you had been deployed, so that if it had gone the length of any other war, it would have been over by the time you were called upon to serve. Was that something that you guys were thinking about as you were being sent to Afghanistan?
It was a consideration, maybe in a different sense, because the war, like you said, any other war would have typically come to a close. We find ourselves in the nature of a very different conflict, and for me, it was. It was actually something that I wanted to experience. A lot of my fellow airmen have deployed multiple times throughout this war and through its companion, the companion war in Iraq.
Many of our troops are returning from Afghanistan. More will be coming home as the war winds down next year. What kind of an adjustment are they facing to returning home and to civilian life? Colonel Stokes, this is certainly within within your area of expertise.
Okay, I think there's a number of ways to look at that. And one of the most important things that we don't consider for a lot of us is the profound change that we go through. And we all change. Everybody changes after a combat tour. And one of the things that we do is we get to take a good look at ourselves when we're in theater. And for a lot of people, that can be a very scary thing. And part of that is when we come back home, we go through a sense of we go through a loss. It's like a sudden death because we lose our extreme sense of purpose. We lose the simplicity of being over there. And life is a little simpler over there for many. We lose a language. We lose a culture. And we come back here, and if we're not self-aware enough, we can go down the wrong path in some cases. And the thing to do is to make sure that you realize, for a lot of us, that you do go through that sense of loss. And you kind of need that purpose. You're trying to recapture that purpose that you had in theater. And some people search for it, they never find it. And some people continue to search for it and eventually find it. But it's very helpful to have something that you can latch onto that's very meaningful when you get back here.
And Colonel Stokes, you say that there's more to being in the military than deployment. Explain what you mean by that.
Some people tend to think of being in the military as simply deployment or some other segmented part of that. But being in the military is like a journey. And it starts when you raise your right hand to join. And I have to say that your family also joins as well. And the military journey begins even to become more profound when for enlisted people, for example, when you get to basic training and you get that opening speech from your drill sergeant, that's where you start to take on, we'll say, the corporate culture, the values, the culture of the military. So it's important to think about that experience. It's important to think about what happens in between deployments, what happens to get ready for a deployment, pre-mobbing, we call it. What happens afterwards, we call it demobbing, and all the things in between. So we need to think of military service as in its totality and not just a little piece of it.
And for you, Brendan, the son of a Afghanistan veteran, what was coming home like for you after being deployed for 6 months there? And you just got back in January, so within this calendar year of 2013.
Just in January, that's correct. It's very different because, like he was alluding to, you spend a lot of time living the military lifestyle, living the military values, and you come home to a world that's in a lot of ways completely different. And for reservists like myself and Colonel Stokes, we live in not only work as professionals, but we also live our lives within the military. And a lot of times those two are conflicting, both in the sense of time invested. So while you're deployed, you're thinking about coming home, and while you're here, you're thinking about getting ready for deployment. You know, what kind of training do I need to accomplish? What do I need to do to be ready and to support operations anywhere in the world at any time? So coming home is always an adjustment. You end up thinking about a lot of the experiences that you had while you were gone, and it's tough to relay that to people who haven't lived it. So for myself, I'm fortunate enough to work with a number of veterans, and I still have my fellow reservists whom I can speak to about these experiences. But when you're when you're dealing with the general civilian population, you know, not that there's, you know, we're all Americans, but just the perspectives on life can be a little bit different, and you kind of have to reframe your thinking when you come back.
Certainly. Colonel Stokes, is the U.S. government, the military, and the Veterans Administration, in your opinion, doing enough to help the men and women returning from Afghanistan and, for that matter, Iraq?
Well, the military has really, really done a great job in recognizing and trying to deal with some of the challenges that military members and their families face these days. And the VA has too, but they can't do everything. And I think that there's a great opportunity for the civilian community to step up and engage military members in a very proactive way. And it could even be that, you know, sometimes I think about some of the outstanding groups of people who send care packages to us. I mean, you just ask and people are so generous. Could it be that maybe we need some of your time and understanding in addition to that? And I think that that would be a great opportunity for certain members of the American public to engage us. There's an author that I've read. Her name is Elizabeth Sammet. She's also a West Point instructor, and she wrote an article entitled "Thank You for Your Service." And in it, she talks about how sometimes "thank you for your service" has become an obligatory salutation. And it's not the point that people don't care. It's that we need to go beyond "thank you for your service" and truly engage and understand our military members and families these days.
My guests have been Army Reserve Colonel Tom Stokes and Air Force Reservist Brendan Stokes, a father and son who both served in Afghanistan. Both are Pittsburgh natives. And on this Veterans Day, I thank you both for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it. Coming up, journalist Carmen Gentile gives us a reporter's perspective on being embedded with troops. It's a Veterans Day edition of Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.